And this is the Council's Connection Show for this month. My name is Michael Goodrich from Yarra Council, the Community Development Officer from the Upper Yarra. And I have a bunch of great guests this week. I have Nelson coming along. We can chat about a bit of Fire Stick and NAIDOC Week coming up from the 5th to 11th of July. Then I've got Ash, a local resident, talking about how he manages his land in Healesville using some learnings from Fire Stick. And then we have Shona from the Healesville Learning Centre talking about the Be Like Banksy sessions that have been happening at the Healesville Learning Centre and some great little arcade at the back end of Healesville where it's local young people have been doing some amazing public art as well. But first off, g'day Nelson.
Hey Mike, how are you mate?
Yeah, good, good.
How are you
going? I think this is the third year we've had you in here for the NAIDOC week and chatting about stuff. Yeah.
Definitely the third year. Have we done it in a row?
I think so.
I remember doing one with you early days when we were still at Borealic.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it's probably been more than that, I know.
We've done a few. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, it's good. I love it, mate. I love being able to have a chat with you. It's always fun.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's great. So, like, you know, we come on NAIDOC Week and chat about different stuff, but big year this year, NAIDOC Week, 50 years.
50 years. 50 years of Deadly is the theme as well.
Yeah, it's great. And it actually, you know, 50 years of NAIDOC Week forming, but actually started well before that in, like, 1938.
Mm.
The first kind of, you know, idea of the protest and Indigenous voice, and from there it became formalised in 75. So it has a long history.
Yeah, it certainly does. It certainly does. It's always NAIDOC Week. It's always framed around being a week of celebration, but it's also, I reckon, a week of reflection of and honouring those ancestors and elders and people who've come before us to get us to this point of where we are. And you know, especially for myself, the role that I do at work and what I do for work, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't on the back of those people.
Yes.
Advocating and doing those things. So, NAIDOC Week, and 50 years of Deadly. 50 years, wow, you know, as an official NAIDOC celebration anyway, as we were saying. So, it'll be cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be great. And like you said, like, there's people in the past who are, like, you know, standing on the shoulder of giants.
Yeah.
But that, like, these people have had this concept of time beyond themselves.
Yep.
And that's so much of an Indigenous way of knowing being doing is, like,
exactly,
we're here for a small fragment of time.
Yeah.
And what we do here is a legacy for people before us and a legacy for people after us as well.
It's Uncle Richard Franklin said years ago, and it's always stuck with me, about planting the seeds of a tree's shade we will never sit under.
Yes.
And I think from an Indigenous lens and what we do, what I do, work and culture and stuff, is it's very much so about that.
Yes.
We had some talk yesterday, not to go into this necessarily, but talk with Barry Firebrace from Treaty come out and that they're talking about the plans, and it's not just like a 5 or 10 year plan or a couple of year plan like we're so used to, especially with council.
It's actually
what does this look like in 100 years?
I love it.
And people really struggle to get their brain past that point because, of course, as humans, it's all about ourselves. We like to, well, how's it going to affect me?
This cycle, my local township.
100%. Yep. So, but in reality, it's not, we're talking about a plan that's going to affect our great-great-grandchildren.
Yes. Yeah.
So what does treaty look like for a 100-year plan? So listening to that, it goes back to that, the seeds of a tree shade will never sit under.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And it's amazing thing of that in a framework of, within our systems, our cultural systems here of governance and structure, and we have these very clear structures of how we work in society, particularly around democracy and these 4-year cycles and elections, and having a vision beyond that is amazing to have and really hard to hold on to and to continue on. So having a treaty like that with that future vision, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Do you feel like talking a bit about that? Because people probably heard about treaty and know a little bit about it, but like, I'm not quite sure, you know, that full purpose, what it is and what it means. And like you said, like that 100-year vision of, like, changing and creating future.
Yeah, like, you know, treaty, essentially, it's something that it affects Indigenous people. So I think one of the misconceptions out there is it's something that once it gets in that people are going to be affected by it. It'll benefit you. It's actually going to benefit non-Indigenous people too. But it's essentially Indigenous people really having the control over matters that affect them, being able to help make decisions and have controls and matters and forming relationships and having agreements and stuff. You know, so it's a Victorian treaty too, which wraps my head around. We've been the only First Nations people in the world that hasn't had a treaty, and we've gone to Victoria through the First Assembly. So I reflect back to the voice referendum about Aboriginal people getting a voice in Parliament and whatnot. But Victoria were already doing that, and that's how we ended up with having a treaty.
Yes.
So far before anyone else. Like, we were talking yesterday, WA is still 30 years off even getting a treaty.
Yeah.
So that's a really proud thing for Victorians. As a Victorian, there's some genuine pride in that, that we're so, like, as a head.
Yeah.
You know, I've been thinking about these things.
And you think about, like, you know, and why Victoria? And think about, you know, like, we have Coranderk here.
Yeah.
Just such a, yep, a powerful history.
Yep.
Something to be, you know, can be, yeah, such a mixed history there of, like, things to be can so proud of. The people there, and then there's, yeah, the hard history there, that it's stuff, yeah, that's happened that's really done some real harm. But the story around that, the leaders there, striving for and looking beyond themselves.
Yeah.
And that forefront of that forward thinking of, like, how do we, we'll live together.
Yeah, yeah. Coranderk is just an absolute, it's the best story in terms of, for a bit of, if it's got a bit of everything, you know, that winning and self-determinative approach of, we can make it, we can show you, we can do it.
Yes.
And then also the defiance of the government and that turning their back on them and just this back and forth thing. I mean, the fact that it's one of the six episodes of the first Australians SBS series, one of the six of since colonisation, most important moments in that history since colonisation. That says something. It's here in Hillsville.
And it's here in Hillsville. Yeah. And it was, you know, people realised, I've heard about it. It's like, Coranderk's still there and it's one being estate and now managing. Yep. But it was huge. This is a small, that land now is a huge, small portion of actually was the whole.
What it was.
Whole, you know, think of the Hillsville Sanctuary was all part of that and beyond those boundaries too.
Yeah. Yep. All the way out to Everard Park as you're crossing the bridge to come into Hillsville. That was all out there. So
it was a
monster at one point.
Yeah. And what, so many things that hit me there, but there was that, the art of those elders there of living in two worlds.
Yep.
Like knowing their own worlds and their own culture and then seeing this new white way of living and going, how do I, this is here, how do we live in these two worlds and work together?
Yep.
And yeah, such a powerful story that just too hard.
And that's why William Barak's last pieces of art were so important and really hard. If you're thinking about it deeply, like think about that this is a man in his final years doing art, painting pictures of a life that he knew we would never see again.
Yes.
Like we will never get back to what it was like before pre-colonisation, obviously. It's not going to happen. So he was depicting a life. He was like in that moment of time, almost like, I don't even know, like a sliding doors moment of,
yes,
I'm going to, this is my last bit of legacy of showing you this is what Australia was like beforehand.
Yeah.
Because he knew we're never going to get back to that.
Yes.
So that was his lasting legacy leaving is just, here's the last bit of remaining of what it was like pre-colonisation.
Yeah. And his journey through that and that thing, like, what's the last thing I'm going to leave? Like, that was the piece that he knew that was most important.
Yes, yes. Making sure that people remembered what culture was like beforehand.
Yes.
And we have to, you know, because obviously we weren't allowed, in a lot of places, we weren't allowed to practice culture, we weren't allowed to speak language. It's like, you know, language and that never, it's not dead or dying, it's just it was asleep. That's when it's being revived now and things, you know, we're bringing a lot of those things back through some amazing work of some people in community and elders. So, yeah, that was his, I reckon that was a really big lasting piece for him. Piece.
Yeah. I think about those, you know, ways of knowing, being and doing and the work, the fire stick work that you've been involved in the past and Shane as well, as well, like that. So bringing those things back back to Victoria as well. You might have heard about fire stick or know about cultural burns.
Tell us
a bit about what that is and what it's looked like now because the things have changed, obviously. And what, you know, we spoke before we went on air about what people perceive fire is.
Yeah,
it's threat and is death and is dangerous and it's not always been that way and it isn't as well. There's different ways to fire can be healing, it can be life-giving.
Yeah, absolutely. So fire these days, as we said, in a real Western lens, is it's a threat. I mean, some aspects people think of it as a tool, but not how it usually is. But pre-colonisation, fire was an everyday part of life. Aboriginal people used to have fire on country every single day. And they just knew the effects it would have on country. It's a cool burn. So it's not like the big hot burns that we quite often see from government agencies.
Yeah.
Like out at Hillsville Sanctuary a few years ago.
Yeah.
Where everything was scorched. And we've seen there's a couple bits in Yarra Ranges as well that they've done not so long ago, which has been really handy from one of the properties we've been burning on. It's literally just up the road to comparison, so that's been good. But a cool burn. So when you're doing traditional burning is you can have a fire and it goes through and literally as it's gone through, you put your hand on the ground. Whereas if that was like these other burns, you wouldn't be able to do that. So it's a cool burn.
Mm.
It's not affecting country in those negative ways. Yeah. It's not burning the tree canopy, which is sacred. It's not affecting the deep soil, the deep layers
of soil.
That's
the amazing thing about all these seeds and the life in the soil when you have this cool burn that just brushes across the top of the soil and moves along quickly.
Yeah.
That all those seeds under the soil there aren't impacted. So when you have a hot burn, a hard burn, the heat that resonates goes deep into the ground. It's all those seeds then die and they can't germinate.
Correct.
And so this soft is just taking off that top layer, allowing an open space for those seeds to then flourish through. And you think about, people talked about past around the using charcoal and using the soft burns to do that, to mix that into your soils. It helps for fertilization and stuff.
Yep.
And that's what those burns are doing, is this really soft little burn, take off that the debris in the top from the leaves, allowing these seeds to flourish afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, there is actually no evidence of pre-colonization of there's no evidence of there being huge metafires.
Mm.
Of course, there was the bushfires. That happens. But there is not like what we're getting today, these firestorms.
Yeah.
Not like Black Saturday, not like the 2020 fires. Like, we're not, there's no evidence of that because Aboriginal people are burning constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, now these days we've got times you can burn and can't burn, but it was, as I said, it was an everyday occurrence of people because they knew that. They knew that once they put fire in the country knew what was going on.
Yep.
You know, they were just so in tune. They were so a part of the connectedness, you know, that Indigenous ways of knowing, being and doing and understanding the land and the land understanding them back. And that's how we had healthy people, healthy country, healthy people.
Yes.
And then flipping that with a lot of the work that I've been doing in my space of resilience is actually realizing that fire is a tool to regenerate country, and after a disaster and whatnot, we need to be also focusing on country and looking after country and getting it back to where it is. So many people will go out into the bush now or go out to a spot and just see that it's green and think, oh, this is really healthy. How good is this? It's lush and green. So but that shouldn't be flowering yet. Tea tree shouldn't be this high up on a mountain because it should be down by water. All these different things. So it's actually not healthy at all. It's very unhealthy. But we've just come into this perception of it's green. It's green and lush, so that must be good.
Yeah, green's good, yeah.
Yeah.
I think to be back to treating that 100-year vision, it's the same with the fire stick work as well, is like healing country after years of these hard burns or of not being cared for, and that's going to take generations to come along to look after country, so it hopefully gets back to a really strong, healthy
place. Yeah, it's not going to be... Uncle Shane Monk out of the last 5-16 couple of weeks ago, he's like, it won't be me, it won't be Nelson's generation. I'm like, mate, I'm 28, he's up. I hope I can see the change. But I understand what he's saying, but hopefully that with this work, it's going to take a long time.
Yeah,
you know, it's been 250 years of I guess doing things not through an Indigenous lens way.
Yes.
So things have, it's not just going to be a snap of the fingers. And we're going to get things back to normal straight away. It's going to take a long time to get to one, heal, two, regenerate and kickstart it back in and then going forward with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a journey. We're just starting to see that the journey started.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the fire stick then that burning was, had been lost a bit for a while. Yeah, because of colonization impacts and the loss of knowledge, and then bring it back into the space and working with, council's been doing a lot of work supporting that, and the teams are looking to do that as well. And Ash can come on afterwards talking about, there's a lot of landowners in the area who have learned from that as well and looking at their own land of how to protect and serve and look after their own land as well.
Which is really good because through my role doing a lot of work with emergency management stakeholders and agencies all over Victoria and even Australia.
Yeah.
One thing I can say is, and I won't say the areas because I might scare people, is that these people in these emergency management roles and agencies are really scared of what is going to come if we don't start acting now.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of bush in our area.
Yeah.
And thick, dense bush with a lot of fuel. And if things don't start to happen and get in play, they're terrified.
Mm.
Straight out terrified.
Yeah. And we had that conversation with the land management workshop a few months ago, and we had a conversation with Landcare and the other people along there talking about that and talking about land management. And I was like, we are all land managers. Like, we all live somewhere on a place of land, unless you're in the urban city and you've got only got concrete around you. But out here, everyone's got a big bit of backyard or some land, and the birds, the pests, all that stuff, they don't care about lines on a map.
Mm.
And it takes everyone to really support and look after their own properties, to protect from pests and the invasion of weeds, but also support that healthy country around, you know, planting natives and having the flowers across the seasons. And yeah,
I'll use water as an example. So with water, okay, so as a Tunnerong man, right, we have water that flows through and goes into Yorta Yorta and Jarjarong country, whatnot, okay?
Yeah.
Once that water is on coming through Tunnerong municipality or on Tunnerong land, it's in our care. It's our job to care for those waterways and care for the water, because if we're not doing our part in the system, once it gets to Jarjarong country, if they get sick and it's killing their life sources and whatnot, that's back on us.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. I guess it's like landowners and stuff like that. If you're not doing your part, or farmers, you're not doing your part now, the next generation or the next person who comes along, they're going to feel those effects too.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, I think that's a really important way to look at it, is everyone has a role to play in a system somewhere.
And we can see it simply too with, you know, like blackberries.
Yeah.
On property, but you're probably next to you, doesn't look after them, and they have infestation. Blackberries come straight on yours, and even if you're doing yours, keep trying to look after your land. It's never going to be enough, because it's
you
always next door.
Every year
you're
comes.
Still going to defeat it and defeat it. Yeah.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, for sure. It's, so everyone has a role to play.
Mm.
We are getting a lot more private residents coming to us about fire stick and wanting to do some on their property.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably been some of the biggest wins so far, even with Brett Ellis out in Dixon's Creek, which is the property we've been using for a long time.
Yes.
If it wasn't for that, you know, we've had so many sessions out there with key stakeholders and councillors and higher-ups, I suppose, where we've been able to show the benefits of it.
Yes.
So if it wasn't for these private landowners,
we'd
who knows where we would be, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it'd be great to have Ash on next to talk about that as well.
Yeah,
and people listening and interested, if you just Google Fire Stick, you'll find it on the internet there. There's the
Fire Sticks Alliance.
Thank you. Fire Sticks Alliance.
Yep.
If you
Google
search
page.
That, you'll find that. I have all information about that and some great videos and some stories about how that is and what's happening in Victoria, but in the background of that as well. So it's amazing resources and storytelling online as well.
Yeah.
Which brings back to, you know, NADEC Week.
Yeah.
Coming up 5th to 11th. 5th year is deadly. I'm going to reel off a few little local events, but if you just Google or search NADEC Week, there'll be a NADEC page there and has all the events for every state, but in Victoria as well. Some great stuff happening locally. We've got locally here the Speaking Country Culture Through Language and Art. It was at the Memo, so it's an exhibition there that's on right now until the end of July, which is amazing as well. We've got some story time happening at the Yarrajuction Library on Monday, the 6th of July. Some stories and song and rhymes celebrating First Nations culture as well. And a bunch of amazing things happening at in the city as well. At Fed Square, there's an Adiwork community event, the Yarra Glen Race Course, run by Mullum, on Monday, the 10th of July, and heaps and heaps of other stuff too. But if you just jump online, go to Night Week and search there. But also SBS, ABC, and Play School all have some great resources online where they've done a curation of some fantastic stories. The Corindoc story as well, and the First Nations is on SBS On Demand as well. So if you just search that on NADEC Week and those places, you'll find some great creation of podcasts and things to read and some documentaries. So plenty to see and do and learn as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And remember, really, really important, that yes, NADEC Week is a celebration of Indigenous culture, but as we like to say, as you live and breathe on this country, you live and breathe those stories and share that history of those thousands of generations who have come before you. You live and breathe that story. So, you know, a lot of people don't realise Warrielic, Mount Donabew Wang, Mombolk, Murrulbark, they're all Indigenous words. You use Indigenous culture in your life every single day without even realizing it's for some people. So you're a part of that story. So celebrate it.
Absolutely. You know, it's part of our story.
Absolutely. Aboriginal Australian history has an it's an Aboriginal history.
It is. And when I talk to friends about that too, it's like, I think from my perspective too, like Indigenous culture is the foundation of Australian culture.
Yeah.
It really is. It's all part of what we have now and what we do, and it's something we can all be really proud of.
Yeah, well, it's the oldest living culture in the world.
Yeah.
Right here in Australia. So
yeah.
Over 60,000 is usually what we say, but there's evidence and there's fossil stuff that's proving to be over 100,000 years. Mm. So that's really cool.
It is. It really is. Something to be proud of for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's great. Thanks, Nelson. Really appreciate it.
Love coming on and being able to chat with you. And
Yeah,
it's good fun.
It's always good. Always good to hear you.
Perfect.
All right.
Awesome, mate.
We'll see you next week. Next year.
Next year. Yes, you will. Next week. All right.
Cheers.
Which way the wind blows, when this day is done.
And that was a special request, Follow the Sun. That was for River, Charlie and Harriet listening in the car. Hope you enjoy that. So, Ash, welcome. We just had a chat with Nelson and talked about you coming on next. You're a local Healesville resident and have a bit of property and doing some bit of burning on the property and lighting fires and trying to do things in different ways. And
absolutely.
Tell us a bit about how, when did you first hear or consider like doing cultural burns or doing that fire stick burns?
Oh,
my property.
Can't remember the exact first time, but I do remember being lucky enough to walk on country with Uncle Dave Wandon out at Corindoke many years ago, and we just talked about country and country health, and yeah, I think that sparked quite a bit of interest. Particularly, we just got a 50-acre property just up the road in Healesville, so it was a real interest to me at that point when we were chatting about, you know, the country's health and how it comes together. And then I think it was probably 6 months or a year later I had the opportunity to meet up with him again, and we did some cool burns at Corindoke just on some poas.
Yeah.
And I'd already done, over the years, I don't know where I'd got the original interest from, but I'd already done quite a few cool burns on poas at home in Healesville with the kids, and you know, I'd go in and say to Lise, I'm just about to go and light up some grasses, and she'd be like, don't burn down the house. And the kids, and I'd drag all the kids out with me. So we must have, I don't know, probably early in my career, I knew that burning poa was the best way to manage them. And so for years and years, I did really small patches, you know, maybe meter by a meter. And always drag the kids out and say, come on, we're going to burn up these grasses and we'll see how they regrow in, you know, 3 months and or 6 months from now. So, yeah, so it's been a long time. But, yeah, I think Uncle Dave Wanners probably support, you know, was sort of the inspiration to do something a bit bigger and look in a broader scale.
Yeah.
And, I've been managed to do quite, for a good 5 years now, I've been doing cool burns on the property in a lot bigger scale. Yeah.
And so what does that look like? So people think, okay, you got a cool burn. What does that look like? How do you know when to do it and how to manage that risk, and what are you looking for in a cool burn?
I think one of the things I learned from Uncle Dave was that you have to know country, and the only way to know country is to get on country. So I spend a lot of time walking the property, whether it's looking at Indigenous plants growing or looking at wildlife or seeing how some of the pastures, because we've got a couple of horses on a couple of the paddocks, and just watching country and just seeing how... Yeah, just seeing how it all functions, seeing where the water flows.
Mm.
And so I think in that time you start to... Oh, and I'm also thinking about, fire risk, because we're in a high fire risk prone area. So I look at what are the fuel loads like in certain areas? How can I start to try and manage some of those? So I think all those things come into play. And then it's about weather and you know, what country's saying in terms of whether it's ready to be burnt and what the burn might look like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sometimes these little windows you just get out and go, oh, actually, this is actually ready to burn. This gully's perfect, you know, because I've got green grass surrounding it. There's a small section that might be, you know, 20 metres wide, and I'll go, a cool burn through here would work perfect now, you know, because it's just some leaf litter or whatever it might be that I'm trying to achieve. So, yeah, and then I think the other thing is just trial and error a little bit. So you've got to be very respectful, but I think just trialing it and doing small areas to start and then building a bit of confidence and understanding and lots of conversations over a long time. I'm lucky enough to have a partner's cousins into this space quite a bit, and I speak to him quite a bit because he used to work for one of the bigger Del Whip, so yeah, just understanding how they used to manage on a really broad scale as well. But and then I just go and start a small fire that makes sense on the ground on the day, and it's really cool.
Yeah. And so what have you seen the changes over those 5 years? Like before, you weren't, were you just doing like those little patch burns or...
Yeah, I think one of the coolest ones I ever saw was I had this patch I'd been eyeing off for 2 years. I burnt, it was probably a good 30 metre by 30 metre area under some larger canopy trees.
Yeah.
And there was something going wrong with it. I couldn't quite work out exactly what it was, but there was no vegetation growth at all under these trees, and there was a lot of acacias that had regrown and were quite thick. So I was like, what's going on here? So it took me a little while to sort of understand it, but then I thought, well, I'll give it a go, cool burning it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't believe it. Like within 8 weeks, I had native grasses coming up, some weed grasses as well.
Yes.
the native grasses coming back up again really quickly. And then, you know, I think it was within about 8 or 9 weeks, I'd seen this, you know, mature wallaby come in and start feeding under these acacias. And I was just like, oh, this is what it's all about.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so that was kind of, yeah. So I think it's, yeah, that was one example. I just was like, yeah, this is really cool. I love how it works. And then just seeing some of the re-veg. And the other thing I do is I do love orchids. So I do burn a little bit thinking, I wonder whether I'll get a small crop of orchids pop up or, yes, you know, some of the native orchids and see what happens there. But I haven't seen any orchids yet, I'll be honest. But every time I burn and do a little patch, I keep an eye on it, particularly coming into spring, you know, looking to see if there's any regrowth. And I could have missed them as well. You know, that's the other thing, is there's a lot of grazing on our property, unfortunately deer, and we also get kangaroos and plenty of wombats. So, you know, you never do know, you could miss them because they do get grazed pretty quickly.
Yes.
The little orchids. So, yeah.
Yeah, but it's an interesting story about, like, the wallaby coming back as well. I think I heard that small story where, about orchids as well, that there was a person doing their cool burns, and then all of a sudden there was these orchids popping up. They've been there for ages, and they what happened? Actually, this wasp flying around. They worked out that the wasps, what the wasps were eating, was after cool burns, there was this sediment that the wasps like for to eat off. And so when the wasps were there, then they pollinated the orchids.
Really? Yeah.
And the orchids came after other insects, and then became, you know, this flow on effect of then actually bring other natives back as well. But it was awesome. Like, started from this, like, the cool burn was actually, this charcoal was actually a bit of food for that, for that wasp, which then the orchid came.
I think we could learn so much more, couldn't we, around this whole biodiversity and how things work.
Stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And so when you're, we talked about, you know, having a 100-year vision. So what is your vision for your property, your 50 acres? You think, like, let's just try it and see what's happening, or do you have a bit of an idea of, like, oh, look, I'm working towards this?
Yeah, look, I think ideally I probably need to have a few more deer removed off the property because they're causing a bit of a drama. And I didn't quite realise the impact they can have, but they are having quite an impact on some of the natural bushland.
And other people, you know, if you walk around the bush and you'll see it all the time, but particularly the male deer with their horns, they'll go and they'll sharpen their horns.
Absolutely.
And if you look around these soft trees, and there'll be all these bark scratched off, kind of around shoulder height-ish, a bit lower and higher.
Yeah.
And that's them sharpening their horns. But then you'll see, oh, my gosh, it's there, and you'll see like a whole, like a street run worth of trees, all their bark being ripped off, which obviously creates disease for the trees and stuff. And so
It can ring bark them.
Yeah, the ring bark. It's crazy. And you see it, you don't really see it, and you see it once, you see it all the time now. You can see this.
They're moving through.
Impacts of the deer.
But I think the other thing is I've got some really cool areas that I need to, what I'd love to trial a bit more burning on. So there's actually some, but it's interesting. Some of them I look at and go, well, that might be good in a year, but that might take 2 years to get to, because we might I might do a bit of patch burning to prepare for a bit more of a centralised burn, just to reduce some of the risk, because you can't just go in and burn one big area at once. So I think I've just, been thinking through how would you actually sort of, you know, I know the mosaics are created when you do burn, but it's almost creating that mosaic yourself and actually doing little sections so that you reduce the risk and I can actually burn an area. Another thing I've been really conscious of, because I'm an arborist by trade, but is just protecting some of those old trees as well. So I just make sure that my burns don't impact the old trees or run up the bark and get into some of those hollows and potentially burn out a tree that's really valuable, because we're so lucky we've got lots of greater gliders on our property and right in the gully as well. So I'm really mindful of those hollow trees and making sure I protect them as best I can, because obviously there's not that many around anymore, or, you know, there are some in the dense bush, but sort of into this interface urban area, they're few and far between, absolutely.
And these things about cool burns is they stay low and cool.
Yeah.
So they're running, like they're just sort of brushed across.
Yeah.
Surface.
It's kind of interesting though, but if you don't do a bit of work in preparing around the actual stump of the tree, you can potentially get a fire, a very small fire, run into the middle of the tree, and they're very difficult to put out. One little one, yeah, it light up. It was only probably about 2 meters high, but it was very difficult to put out. I couldn't believe how much water it took me to get in there to save this hollow. And it was only a small hollow, but yeah, I could imagine that in a bigger scale tree. And as we've seen with some of the recent fires and years, that could be quite, they can burn for a long time and take out some beautiful habitat trees.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So people listening think, oh, this sounds interesting, where can I find it more, or how can I potentially get started? Do you have any tips or directions of where? Oh,
gosh, I was probably just really, I mean, I've been in horticulture for a long time, so I was lucky enough to start. I mean, you could really start, if I think back where I started, was just burning poas, and it might be only a metre by a metre, and just getting a water supply down to it. And then, you know, burning those in probably, you know, late autumn so that you can see all the winter spring growth on them. I mean, if you wanted to start doing small fires in garden settings on native plants, I think that's not a bad way to start.
Yeah.
But I'm not an expert, and you know, I was clearly lucky enough to have a bit of guidance with Uncle Dave. So I think, you know, if you can tap into some local Indigenous knowledge and have those conversations, that's also a great way to start as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the Fire Stick Alliance is a great resource too. If you search them, you'll find some good resources through that.
Yeah, absolutely, yep.
And sort of point your way in, maybe make those local connections as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. Well, thanks, Ash, for sharing. Really appreciate that.
Oh, that's all right. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate coming along and having a chat about it.
We've got something special coming up too, because your daughter.
Yes, Maya.
Maya has produced a song.
She has. She's written her own song and produced it. And, it's got onto Triple J Unearthed. So, So I thought, it'd be great if we could play that.
Yeah. This is Maya, local Hillsville resident, and her song is called I Don't Want to Be the Girl.
Call that your man talks about and says, oh God, you touched a bullet. And I don't want to be the girl that your friends talk about and say, oh God, you're the best you'll get. Emotions overpowered and I became a coward. I wish I could be honest, just like I had promised. I'm so that that's not how the story ends. I just wanna say I'm sorry that you lost. Oh, who you thought I was. I tricked you into thinking I am better than I am. Save myself for your cost. I don't wanna be the girl you tell your kids about and say, oh God, that was lesson learned. And I don't wanna be the girl that you will think about and say, oh God, why was no one concerned? Emotions overpowered, so I became a coward. I wish I could be honest, just like I had promised. I'm sorry for the way that I treated you that day. Oh, you used to want to pick a fence, but that's not how the story ends. I just wanna say I'm sorry that you lost. Oh, who you thought I was. Oh, I tricked you into thinking I am better than I am. Save myself for your cost. Oh, I know that I'll regret it and you'll never forget it. I know that didn't break you and you'll find somebody new. I know that I say sorry and you say not to worry. Play rock, paper, hearts. I once saw through my dart. I know that I'll regret it and you'll somehow forget it. I saw you at the party when our friends now are we. I know that you'll be fine, cause I have lost my mind. I'm sorry for the way that I treated you that day. Oh, you used to wanna pick a fence, but that's not how the story ends. I just wanna say I'm sorry that you lost. Oh, who you thought I was. I tricked you into
talks about and says, oh God, you dodged a bullet. Sorry that I am the girl that your friends talk about and say, oh God, you're the best I'll get.
And that was Maya, local Healesville resident, who is on Unearth Triple J. So if you want to find out her song and listen to it again or vote for her, just go on to Unearth Triple J, search Maya, and the song was I Don't Want to Be a Girl. How cool is that?
Well, that was a great song. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah. Another local, another legend. Hey, Shona. Now, Shona's from the Healesville Learning and Living Centre. And I've got something pretty cool, a little project that's been happening recently in next month, which is Be Like Banksy.
Yeah, so we did our first round in term one, mm-hmm. had a great engagement and ended up with our final installation in the little alleyway at the east end of Healesville between 301 and 303.
Yep.
So between the legal service and the osteo, the physio there.
I was going to say, yeah,
Yes. So go and check that out. So we've got... we've been registered to continue adding to that installation over the next 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we can squeeze in another four rounds of Banksy in that time.
Yeah.
Now, just
a step back. People don't know who Banksy is.
So Banksy is an assumed English street art artist.
Yes.
Who has a global following and... has certainly left his mark by leaving a lot of very confronting and thought-provoking artworks
across the around, world.
Yeah, across the world and in lots of different spaces. And he goes by Banksy, but his identity is unknown officially, I think, and still. Although there's been some question of that recently, but I'm not sure of the details. But The theme was in terms of being like Banksy, it's not about the style of the art. It's more about helping young people to express their thoughts and feelings about things in a way that is thought-provoking, maybe confrontational, but also respectful. So how do we say difficult things? And Banksy certainly addresses some really, you know, challenging issues. In a way that offers conversation, I guess, and not defence, that doesn't create that defensive reflex in other people. So
it opens up curiosity, I think.
Yeah, exactly right. So a good skill to have, a good skill for all of us to have, not just our young people.
And the beautiful thing about that public art as well is this beautiful public conversation. You can walk past and go, hey, this thought provoking. Oh, what does that mean? What are your thoughts about that?
And I think I said this in the paper, but... I think the nice thing for us in the first round, just getting to know some of these young people, was that they really came to the table with all their own artwork already in their little sketchbooks for many of them.
Yes.
And so it was just about learning ways to scale their work up and then find methods to use different mediums, spray paint and different things and put it up in the alley. And I guess what that reflects is that actually they just want to be young people who are enjoying their art.
Yes.
But also I guess really counters that perhaps loud narrative that we often hear about young people.
Yeah.
Because these are an incredible group of young people that are really just doing fabulous things and are fabulous young people.
Yeah.
So that was, it's been really a real privilege to get to know them, and I'm really excited that we can deliver that again. And this year we've got, this term we've got a different artist leading that program. So last time Paul Sonsi led that.
Yes.
And this time Cora Zon, who does, many people may know locally, for doing her zine workshops at the library.
Yes.
But Cora also does screen printing. So she's going to be letting us use her table at Living and Learning Centre, and hopefully we'll be able to use it for some things outside of Banksy as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole nother, a different skill set, a different medium to be working with, but definitely something that is still relevant to that sort of street art methods, I guess, and outcomes. So, yeah, very excited to see what we can do there, and potentially some cross-pollination with some of the local musicians that Cora's working on in other other places. So, you know, we might see some of the Banksy youth creating some poster stuff for them, maybe.
Well, that's where I think that screen printing can be such a mixed medium of how that you produce that as well. So
Just very initial conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, once you get the kids in the room, it might go in a completely different direction.
All the passion with it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really exciting. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We've got our women's sheds programs, you know, going along as usual. Yeah.
So people might know about men's sheds, but they actually have a women's shed here in Healesville.
Yeah, so we run 4 sessions a week. And so that's our women's shed program, or our women's woodwork program, and that's under the ACFI model. Mm-hmm. So all our programs for people on healthcare concession or pensioner concession are capped at $50 for the year if they come under that ACFI delivery, and the women's shed is one of those. So also in that space is our upcycling and some computer programs, and but we've also got some non-educational classes, which is our craft space arts and minds program, which is arts and minds mental health peer support in the art room, some of the things that we're also looking forward to in term 3 are a taster for carpentry for our Indigenous community. So that's being led by Swinburne's Moondani Toombadool unit, who are based in Hawthorne, I believe, and Croydon. And so they're going to be doing a taster to see if anyone would be interested, or give them a feel for what it might be like to go into a certain 4, I think it is.
In carpentry, yes.
Yeah, in carpentry. Amazing. So that's exciting. And then continuing on with our redevelopment of One Badger Creek Road. So very excited to announce that we'll be moving back to that site. We've had our office at the library at the community link there for a while now, about 18 months or so. And so getting ready to move back down this term into our admin space down at One Badger Creek Road, and working really hard to do a re-landscaping of that site over the coming year or so. Who knows how long that will take once we get started.
It's a beautiful space out there.
It is a beautiful space.
Reimagining that space and doing the garden beds and
And some public art, you know. I think initially there used to be some sculpture work in the garden and potentially doing some stuff in our carpentry shed around that sort of stuff as well would be nice. But, you know, who knows where that could lead us, and I guess that is a project that we would really like a lot of community engagement on. So the more people who want to come down and volunteer and let us know, you know, if you've got skill sets, because I'm sort of working on the landscaping stuff, but we're also doing an upgrade of all the buildings on the site, which is a huge undertaking. And we'll be looking to engage with different community groups to support us in that. And anyone who has skill sets, all those retired people in our community that would like to help, we would love to have you
along those workshops and got some time to give.
Exactly right. Yeah. Where we can create workshops around those skill sets so that we're creating improvements on our site, but also an opportunity for people to learn that skill. We would love to pair those things up as much as possible.
Yeah.
We have a beeswax wrap workshop.
Yes, fantastic.
And the woman that's leading that, who also does our upcycling class, so mm-hmm. that's another one of our ACFI courses, upcycling fashion. And they do things around handbags and all sorts of things that aren't just clothing. But yeah, they've been playing a little bit with the beeswax wraps, and so she thought that she'd offer a workshop on that. And depending on how confident she is, once she's had a few goes later in the term, we might even offer the beeswax bread bags, which are a thing too. Yes. So,
and see, when you haven't heard of the wheat beeswax, they've got something, you know, get a cotton cloth, because it'd be a beautiful material, and you're like, dip that and set that in beeswax, and it becomes your replacement for glad wrap.
Yeah, replacement for glad wrap, and all of those non-reusable things that we use in the kitchen now. So trying to reduce the need for those, but also it extends the life of the food mm-hmm. because the beeswax, as I understand it, has its own microbial properties, which makes
preservative.
Yeah, keeps the food healthier longer. So that's great. And then moving into term four, I think in the term between 3-4, holidays, we've got our first Twilight Market, which is on 16th of October, which is a Friday night, and that's from 4 till 8. Mm-hmm. At the site there at the Living and Learning Centre, and also a return to our op shop tours just in time for Christmas.
Tell us more about the op shop tours.
So the op shop tours in the past, we're still confirming details for this round, but we had tried to stick to the Yarra Ranges when they were funded by Yarra Ranges Council.
Yes.
So that people would be introduced to all the different wonderful op shops in the Yarra Ranges. We did get a little bit of funding from the Hillsville Community Market for the next rounds, and so that allowed us to explore some of those a little bit further away, and we went down towards Warrandyte and Diamond Creek, which was very cool.
Yep.
And this time I think we're still speaking to some funding bodies around that, so we'll confirm that once that's been confirmed. But starting off with the op shops around Christmas, before Christmas, towards the Basin, I think.
Yeah, some great collection of op shops.
Too far away for a day trip.
Yeah.
And then some of the other ones that we'll be looking at moving into 2027, we have had some conversations about perhaps a op shop or two, and then a stop at an open garden.
Oh, beautiful.
A lot of the people that come into the centre and have been on the op shops tours before, part of the reason that they love to come along is because they don't have the capacity to get to these places on their own generally.
Don't drive, or
for whatever reason. And so it also is then something that they don't do in all those other spaces.
Yeah,
so whether it be the Lotus Garden or, you know, we've looked at lots of different places, so perhaps combining some of those things. Mm. And as always, if people have suggestions for places they'd like to see or programs they'd like to run, one of the things that's kept me very busy in the last few weeks, as I'm sure you'd appreciate, Michael, working for council, is that it's annual grant season.
It is.
And so lots of people coming to us who would like to deliver programs at the Living and Learning Centre.
Mm-hmm.
And so we then, you know, offer them letters of support.
Yes.
If they're things that the community, that, you know, that we know that there's a need for those things, and we can partner, not partner in the projects, but partner in terms of them being able to deliver them. And I guess it's a way of us being able to bring more activity to the place without us having to actually deliver all that stuff ourselves. So it is a great way to partner and really excited about some of the amazing things that people come forward with.
Yeah.
I wish the council could fund them all.
Oh,
I know it's
good.
I'm glad I'm not in that job picking all the, because just the things that come across our space.
Yeah.
So
are
incredible.
So much to hear and see and do. And
thank you, Michael.
Our show to wrap up. But you have a new website too.
We do have a new website. It's just been launched. Our new manager, who's I keep saying new, but he's been with us for almost a year. It'll be a year in August.
Yep.
Has been working very hard, and that was launched about a week ago.
Yep.
So go and check out the new website. Same address, hllc.org.au.
Mm-hmm.
And have a look at all the things that are coming. And as these new things come on for term three, they'll be popping up there in our term guides. And it's great. Very exciting.
Thank you so much. And I'd love to have you back later on in time for Christmas to hear about those options.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Thanks, Shana.
Thanks, Michael.
See you next time.
You too.